nightmare.
Hello and welcome to Cinema Subculture, the podcast where we discuss everything strange, obscure and downright messed up in the world of movies. And it's Christmas time. Merry Christmas, Simon.
Merry Christmas, Gary. Our second annual Christmas special.
Yes.
Festivities are rolling, as is the beer. And the French fancies.
Yep.
Because Gary let us down with the mince pies. We only had the Sparzone brand, apparently. And he's tried their biscuits and they're no good.
Lack of planning there, no pies, but...
Ach, no, it's a party. It's a party all around, Gary. So, welcome to our Christmas episode. So tonight we're going to be looking at a few films that have kind of Christmas... a Christmas main theme to the film, but with a kind of darker side to it. Last year we looked at Rare Exports, which was a kind of odd Christmas film with quite a bit of a Christmas message, I feel. You know, it's quite a warm and fuzzy kind of Spielberg-esque movie, but with a dark side to it. This is more of a kind of slasher film Christmas mashup.
Right. Mm.
So let's get started, Gary. We're getting drunk and we're getting merry and we're getting talking about cutting people up. So what are we going to be looking at first, Gary? You lead the way.
I was thinking we might go in chronological order.
Right.
So we travel back to 1974.
Sure, so we're going back to, you said it there?
It's a little film called Black Christmas.
Directed by Bob Clark?
Yes.
Lovely. Okay. Kind of widely, I think, accepted as... is the Halloween, if Halloween's the kind of most successful start of the kind of modern American slasher film, this is widely accepted as the kind of the preempt to that. It's kind of like the forgotten classic that was before even Halloween.
Yeah.
Kind of start of the American slasher proper, but not necessarily, I don't think, very as successful Halloween was, obviously. Do you want to give us a bit of a synopsis?
Well, the film follows the lives of a group of young university students, females.
Yes, residents in a sorority house.
Aye.
Yes.
And it's in the lead up to Christmas, and they're all doing things like going home.
Drinking wine.
Oh, aye. Drinking the wine. And a strange intruder breaks into the house and lurks in the attic and gets up to some...
hijinks.
Nasty things, yeah. Mm.
So we watched this film together. I had seen it before. I watched it last Christmas for my own shits and giggles. I really enjoyed this film. I thought I got a lot out of it. Coming from like being a big fan of Halloween and having this come before it, there was a lot of kind of stuff that you saw in later slashers that I thought was kind of maybe skipped Halloween a little bit, you know? You know, we talked about... Carpenter doing like kind of more classical monster movie, or like, you know, kind of big budget kind of the way shooting it. This felt like a bit more like the kind of 80s slashers, like maybe like Friday the 13th kind of an aesthetic and things. But I really enjoyed this from right from the first kind of shot of the film with the killer like climbing up the drain pipe, and you know, to the attic. I don't know, just something about the way that shot, I said to you at the time, I don't know quite how they did it, because cameras aren't light, and it literally looks that we're seeing from a first person's perspective, whereas in other films, I think that's quite easily, you know, you could see that's easily shot to be fake.
Mm.
I mean, this guy was climbing up inside a building, and he, you know, he sees hands, I don't know, like, you know, he's not holding onto it with one hand, anything like that. It was before the Steadicam Panaglide. You know?
Right, yeah.
So, to me, quite impressive, even just from that first shot. Was things like some of the language in it that were used that felt very modern to me.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not something that I saw much of in the kind of... even the 80s slashers, you know what I mean? Quite strong language. Stuff that... I mean, I don't know, the voice on the phone that we hear, it sounds like some maybe the person that did like Reagan's voice from The Exorcist. I don't know. It reminded me of that quite a bit. Yeah, I don't really know.
It was similar to that.
And even right down to the ending, which I was, is completely unsatisfying, but I quite liked it as a twist on the kind of what came after it when you usually kind of know so much about what's going on.
Yeah.
And not, it doesn't feel like a setup necessarily for a sequel.
Mm.
It seems quite happy. You know, it's, you might say it is a kind of setup for a sequel because of the way it ends. But to me, it's like, it almost works in the opposite way to me, because it's it's kind of leaving it alone. It's just...
Was Halloween meant to... Was Carpenter brought in to do the sequel to this, is that right?
Well, I think the idea was, like, you know, that was what I always heard, but, like, I always considered it like a kind of... Oh, this was meant to be, like, Black Christmas 2. But when you think of it in the way of the 70s and 80s, when, like, Fulci was doing sequels to Dawn of the Dead, that kind of thing, unofficial sequels.
Hmm.
I mean, this went by another name, Silent Night, Evil Night.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it may have just been one of those cases where they were going to capitalise on the name.
Mm-hmm.
And do a kind of unofficial sequel to it. I think that's what I always heard, that the production of Halloween before Carpenter was brought on, you know, they said they were wanting to make a sequel to Black Christmas.
Right.
But again, I don't think it would have been involved Bob Clark or any of the writers or anything like that. I think it was just very much in that era when they were just making, using the name.
Yeah.
So you, I don't think you didn't seem to enjoy it quite a lot. We watched it. But you say you've watched it since?
I did. A second time, I got more out of it, I think. No, it's quite interesting. Like, it's definitely precedes the 80s stuff in the sense that it's very serious and it's quite a somber tone.
Mm-hmm.
Although there is comedy in it. That's one maybe minor criticism I have. I don't know if that's all that balanced. It says sometimes the comedy's a wee bit broad, maybe.
Yeah, the housekeeper or the house mother, whatever it is, her stuff's quite slapsticky.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the stuff that Margot Kidder does as well. No, it's an interesting film. Like, it deals with some quite heavy subject matter. The whole abortion storyline is quite heavy. And I didn't really get it the first time, but I think that's actually the kind of core of the film. You could read it as a kind of morality tale about abortion, but I was kind of thinking, I can't quite tell the intentions of Bob Clark, because I was thinking, watching it a second time, it's clear to me that that's kind of the motivations of the killer. Did you get that? Because it seems to me he's, at first it seemed, I didn't get that, and it just seemed that it was a random...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the thing was that it's scary because he's an unmotivated killer.
Right.
But it seems to me that he's been the victim of an aborted pregnancy or something. Not him personally, but his child. Or he's got someone pregnant.
That's not the way I took it. No,
really?
No, not at all. For a number of reasons, I would say that's not the way I took it. One being... Like, the first girl he kills is literally the usual, what you would usually class as the last girl. The doesn't drink, doesn't have sex, very innocent, right?
Yeah.
So, why is he killing her? You mean the whole attack in the house? But he doesn't know about the pregnancy. No one knows about it until...
he could.
I mean, I guess he could, but...
I think it's more he's attacking the... a group of independent women who are sexually active.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with. The other reason would... I take it more there's something going on in his childhood, and because he refers to a Billy and an Agnes quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I would take it that he would maybe be Billy within that. And it's either... It may be... The abortion thing doesn't ring with me at all. It's either something that's happened to me, it's either something that's happened to him in his childhood and his sister's Agnes...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she's died, maybe something's happened, maybe they've been abused, I don't know. Or maybe even thinking from the parent angle, maybe he's had children called Billy and Agnes.
Right.
And they've been killed in some manner, you know, an accident or something. I don't know, but I never took that, you know, to him to have a history with abortion because I don't feel there's enough evidence there that he knows about the abortion, about the baby, the pregnancy before.
Yeah, well, that's a slight inconsistency, but... from what I took,
because I mean, they make a deal out of that when they say about it not being her boyfriend, because he didn't know about the abortion until you know, after the first couple of phone calls,
right?
So, you know,
but I think in the phone calls, I think he's Billy, and Agnes is someone who got pregnant,
Right.
But he has maybe like history of mental illness or something. And some of the voices are like possibly his father or someone saying, "You left him alone with Agnes. What are you doing?" Mm-hmm. I think he might have got her pregnant or something. Because there's one scene where the he puts a baby doll in the hands of the first victim. So that's where I got that. Because I was thinking, like, okay, I got the abortion thing the first time as the sort of subplot. But then I was thinking, like, when was this film made? And it was 74. And I looked up sort of abortion in the USA, and it was 73 that abortion became legalised across the United States. So I thought, okay, that's an undercurrent. And it's all about sort of 70s sexual politics and all that. So I thought, all right, that's probably what it's... I think that that kind of clicked for me.
I mean, that's... it may be... That may be the undercurrent of what Bob Clark's trying to get at, or the writers. For me, it didn't jump out as that. Definitely something's happened with kids, either him or his own kids, I would say. But the abortion thing didn't jump out to me. But I take your meaning for the baby, the doll thing. That definitely... The fact that he keeps her.
Yeah.
And she... Maybe there's something behind how... The fact that he kind of shrink wraps her. The virginal, innocent one of the group. Everyone else kind of gets left downstairs in the kind of slums. I mean, maybe there's definitely maybe something there. I mean...
Because that made the killer kind of click for me as just a more abstract idea. Because the first time, superficially, I thought, okay, that's quite interesting that they've done a killer who you don't know who the identity and you don't know his motivation. But I felt that it was slightly gimmicky because, okay, it's something that it's just you're having like a pure kind of nihilistic idea that there's evil in the world and it does damage. But I didn't feel that was weaved enough into the rest of the story thematically to justify that as an abstract idea. But watching it again from the abortion angle, I think it kind of works for that. But
I'm just thinking. There's a young girl that they find in a field dead.
Yeah.
Is there any mention of her father?
Her father.
You know, because her mum's
there.
She's
got a mother, yeah. I don't think so.
I don't know, like, because I think it's presumed, or I probably presumed when I watched it, that it was maybe the killer that killed her.
I guess it's possible, yeah.
But what if that was... if that was his daughter, and he did have a history of, I mean, I'm just totally hypothesizing here, I'm just jumping into something. You know, he did have a history of mental illness, but was stable, and something, an accident happened, or he killed his daughter accidentally, and that's when he, you know, then we pick up the film. Because nothing's really explained about that murder beyond, and she seems to be like a young, like 13-year-old girl.
I guess it's possible, but we do get a couple of glimpses of his face, and he seems younger than the mother, but...
I don't know. I don't know what the connection is with that. That seems a bit.
I think that's
random.
About just again the sort of death of children. But going on the whole abortion angle, I can't quite tell. I'd probably need to watch the film another couple of times. But I don't know if it's. I read something online who that sort of understood the film as a cautionary tale, as an anti-abortion film.
Right.
But I can't really tell if that's the intention, or it's just using the sort of debates around abortion, because even if you are sort of pro-choice, you must take on board that there is, it's not just, it's a difficult decision, whatever stance you take on it. So it's just, okay, this is a real social problem at the moment, and it's just kind of throwing it up there and building it into a horror film to give it some social relevance. Yeah, I don't really read it as an anti-feminist film or anything like that, or a anti-female liberation film.
No.
But maybe, yeah, I don't think it is that.
It's interesting to see those themes so strong, you know, the strong female characters presented. Like, you know, we weren't quite into the kind of tropes of all the kind of 80s slashers yet, where that was kind of very much a thing, you know, you have sex, you die kind of thing, you know, and the whole... Jamie Lee Curtis, the virginal girl, like survives. So it's quite interesting to see that quite strongly presented these strong female characters. Mm. I feel, you know what I mean? All of them, there's, I mean, the only one that's a little meek is the first girl that gets killed.
Who's
not necessarily, she's obviously more reserved, but she's not quite as outspoken as the rest of them are. Whereas like your Margot Kidder and your Olivia Hussey, and the character, they all seem very, like, they know what they want to do.
Aye.
Except for that one line where Olivia Hussey berates her boyfriend about the line about, you know, when we met, that you told me about your dreams to be like a concert pianist, and that's how you, the only thing you ever wanted to do. And remember how I said I want to do some things too? I still want to do some of those things. Which I thought was probably the worst worst written female line ever. You know, it's so... Oh, God. But... I think the characters, the way they're presented, the fact that she, like, isn't going to tell him about the abortion and has already made her mind up, it's very, like, shows a very strong female character. Like, you know, they're not...
Yeah.
And she's not just running around screaming all the time.
Yeah,
you know, it seems like they've got kind of life. So I quite like that part of it. As it did feel a little more... the characterisation of all the characters seemed a little better than some of the later slashers that we got, including even Halloween. Like, I mean, I'd say, you know, it's...
it's quite a mature film.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, quite serious.
What about the Christmas elements? I mean, obviously, the framing is... really, that's the only Christmas element, is that it's set at Christmas.
Aye.
There's not much in the way of... I mean, kind of, some of the girls are leaving for Christmas and things like that. So it's used as a kind of plot device.
In the sense that everyone's kind of leaving, and it makes it more possible that, oh, is she here?
Right.
Yeah, no, she went home.
Such and such left. Yeah.
I quite like the fact that, I guess it is a plot device, but the fact it's Black Christmas, it makes it a kind of anti-Christmas movie in a kind of thematic way. It builds Christmas in kind of thematically.
Yes.
And then the whole abortion thing is about, it's also anti the traditional, like, Dickensian family Christmas. This one's about killing wains.
Right, aye. Uh-huh.
I think there's, did you read that essay on Christmas Evil? And the Arrow? I skimmed through it that night. Uh-huh. It was that when Kim Newman's talking about that kind of catharsis you get from Christmas horror movies, which are antidotes to that traditional, like, Christmas movie. Where it's no all nice, everyday's round the fire.
Yeah.
Eating the chestnuts and that.
Well, that's it. It does kind of, like, take away from that kind of sickly sweet, kind of cheesy feel that you get. In Britain, I think we're kind of, that's us anyway. There's a kind of dark humour to a lot of our, like, festive times, I think, especially, well, having only had experience of being Scottish, I can say that we have that kind of thing, you know, like a kind of sarcastic, kind of, not mean spirit, but kind of, you know what I mean, kind of darkly playful at Christmas even, you know what I mean, and we don't get kind of the way we see in American films of kind of saccharine sweet round the table, everyone, like, you know, God bless us, everyone.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, that's obviously Dickens as well. But I think so that probably appeals to us, the kind of darker side of the festivities. Yep. So, anything else to say on Black Christmas?
The only other thing that I noted down was, I thought that the Barb character, the Margot Kidder character,
yeah,
her death scene, it's quite interesting. I thought it was very Argento-esque. Reminded me of Suspiria, but obviously Suspiria came after
the Barb scene.
Yeah, that's the one she gets there. She gets killed by a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, like, the short selection, the cutting was very similar to that, the first big scene in Suspiria.
And even the setup of it, like, felt very Argento, you know, the kind of bluff.
Right,
kinda
yeah,
go
yeah.
to it and then get up, you know,
aye.
Go back.
Just because you've got, like, the stabbing and then he's cutting to the choir singers outside and he's doing some cuts similar to what Argento does in Suspiria, where they're almost non-diegetic. It's quite weird. It's sort of an abstract. He's cutting to odd angles, which I think is that actually part of the scene. So I was thinking, all right, that's Argento, but mm-hmm. that actually came after, so maybe did Argento mm. take a leaf from Bob Clark? Or...
Yeah, I mean, the Angles thing, yeah, but yeah. I mean, obviously, Argento had done the Gigli for a while before that, so...
Yeah, he'd done a few.
So maybe there was...
I don't know those films as well, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. Crystal Plumage I have seen, but I'm not that...
Yeah...
Four Flies and Grey Velvet.
Deep Red before this?
No, Deep Red was after. I'm 75.
That's surprised now.
I don't know if Cat and Nine Tails was before.
Cat and Nine Tails probably was before, right. but I wouldn't say too much in that.
There. Right.
The comedy, you were talking about the comedy aspects earlier on. I think that, I was thinking about when you were saying it, but I think that is a kind of a hangover from the Hitchcock stuff. I think maybe, you know, the kind of a bit of comedy put in. Yeah. I felt that character felt would have been quite at home in some of, maybe not Psycho or anything, but like some of Hitchcock's, like the Maid in Rope and thing, you know, the kind of snarky kind of, or in Rear Window, the nurse that comes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it seems quite at home, so maybe a little odd to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does feel a little bit out of place in this film with the serious tone and the rest of it.
Mm.
But I really enjoyed this film, and I was looking forward to watching it again this year.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got something out of it from your second watch.
It's quite an interesting film, yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the ending of the film?
I quite liked this. I liked it. I was kind of... I was intrigued with it not finding out like who it was, even though... sometimes that maybe they've done that before... And you don't even hear a voice or anything like that. But the fact we'd heard this kind of schizophrenic voice in the phone, and we heard the talk and things like that, so we had been given little snippets and being able to make up our own mind of what we thought the killer was or who was, or as you've done, like, you know, like his backstory.
Yeah.
I quite liked that.
Yeah.
So the actual ending felt a bit like, why were they leaving on the house? And
I thought it was a bit ridiculous at first. They wouldn't even search it, I think, but they do justify that.
They do justify
which I missed the first time. Mm-hmm. When someone says, you would check upstairs? No. The chief says, we'll leave it to forensics.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Don't touch anything. Mm-hmm. What's his name? John Paxton.
John Saxon.
Saxon. Yeah. Who's really good in the film.
I mean, the performances are fairly good in the film. What do you think of Olivia Hussey's performance?
She's all right. Pretty good. Yeah. Although the accent's weird.
Yeah, I don't know what her accent is. I'm not really sure. I've never really looked into it too deeply.
It's like kind of English.
Yeah.
Mixed with French, maybe. I don't know.
I'm quite an admirer of hers. I think she's quite pretty, but...
She looks like Catherine Zeta-Jones, I thought.
Yeah, maybe a young Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Well, why?
She's apparently Argentine-born, British accent, British actress. Says Wikipedia saying an Argentine-born British actress, but yeah, an interesting side note. She played Norma Bates in Psycho 4. She played Norman Bates' mum in Psycho 4.
Interesting.
Because
the killer, I think, it takes a nod from Norman Bates.
Definitely
the killer in this. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've always been a bit of an admirer of hers. I haven't seen many good films with her in, but I'm sure she probably did some. I quite like Black Christmas anyway.
Let's move on and we'll talk about Christmas Evil.
Okay, Christmas Evil.
1980.
Okay.
Director was Lewis something.
Lewis something, yes. I'm sure they'd be happy to know that you remember him. Lewis Jackson. You got it? Give us a wee a synopsis.
A young boy witnesses Santa. Or is it Santa?
So
really his father in disguise.
Right, what you're telling
me is... But it's getting up to some...
You saw my mummy kissing Santa Claus last night?
Or something more and worse.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember some bobble fondling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He
was too young to know what bobble fondling was.
I still don't know what it is.
No, not me either. But he was definitely confused.
Yeah.
Yes, that was set in 1947 apparently.
But yeah, so this traumatizes the young fellow.
Sure.
And he becomes sort of fixated with Christmas and wants to do good. He'd like to ideally be Santa, I think, but
Where does that come from? Is he went to pump his maw?
Well, could be.
Like, I was thinking about that there just when you were giving the synopsis, and I was realising, you know, where he goes from the little boy who sees this Santa, who's probably his dad, fondling his mother in some way, although he seems to be crouching on his knees while she stands in front of him with some suspenders on, and she fondles his hat, and he just laughs. I don't know what that is supposed to be.
Yeah,
but because basically the setup is that him and his brother and his mum are sitting the stairs, and somebody comes down the chimney,
aye,
and it's Santa, and he gives him a bit of a nod and a wink and stuff, and touches his nose or something like that. But so then after he sees this little thing, he's had an argument with his brother, whose brother's saying, "It's Dad, don't be stupid." And he's like, "No, it's Santa. I'll prove it. I'll beat you when I go downstairs. He's not even near pumping more." And then he goes downstairs and he is.
Oh, no, but he wasn't. That's after. Yeah.
Well, aye.
Aye. At first, he just comes in the chimney and he's like,
yeah,
hey,
yeah,
Santa.
That's nice. That's good stuff.
And his brother says, "No, it's your dad, mate."
It's Dad when you go, they go to bed, though.
Aye.
And he's like, they're up all night arguing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, "Why is it was Dad, you dafty?
Yeah.
How do you think he came what we needed? I never wrote a letter. Did you write a letter? No." So,
I did, but I burnt it in the fire.
Oh, man. Big mistake. I thought it was meant to go up the chimney. So, after that, he heads to the loft or some sort of place.
Yeah.
It's like a log cabin, I don't know.
He goes in, which is the act then.
Yeah. It's after that. And he sees a solitary snow globe that's been left in the attic. You know, because you take all the deckies down to decorate the house, but you leave the snow globe. So, and he goes over and breaks it and stabs a bit into his hand.
Mm.
Flash forward to the present day. We're met with Harry, who works in a toy factory, makes cheap, nasty toys, who seems to be obsessed with quality control with the toys. He wants good toys for, you know, things. But I don't see the connection, how he gets from, you know?
Yeah.
He seems to be obsessed with Santa.
Yeah, the psychology of the film is a bit shoddy, shall we say.
Yeah, I don't know where the connection is. I mean, something like Silent Night, Deadly Night, I see how that the guy gets there, right? But in this, I'm like, I don't see how he gets there. But I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think it's... See, it's a bit kind of a... you think it's about the whole sexual act, and he's sort of has sexual hang-ups because of that,
okay,
psychological problems because of that. But and as the film progresses and it ends, you realise it's just about winning a bet with his brother to prove that it was actually Santa.
That's right, aye. Yeah.
So the thing is, alright, he's going to become Santa to prove Santa's real. I think. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the film's all over the place.
It really is. It swings from one extreme to the other. He seems to, like, he gets screwed over at work, the worker, somebody's shift, and the guy is just taking a lenin.
Yeah.
And then he decides he's going to dress up. He's watching the parade, Thanksgiving parade, and says he's not going to go to his brother's for dinner.
Yeah.
And then decides he's going to dress up. Although he's kind of doing it throughout before that, the film, making a kind of suit of something padded and things like that. So he dresses up as Santa on Christmas Eve and goes out and steals presents from... Oh, that's the thing. He's got the fucking good, naughty, nice list.
Yes.
Before that, we even get there, we hear him like reciting why people are naughty and nice, including one particular wee boy who curses something else and picks his nose. But with other kids, the good kid, remember, he's out, he's walking and he's having a laugh with them. He's a good guy with them, you know, and they're kind of like, "What do you want for Christmas?" And they're shouting back and stuff like that. And then there's one little kid that's like, he wants Penthouse magazine. He's like, "Fucking naughty, that's a dick." Spits in his face. Did a knife to his gob. That's how the Joker got those scars in Dark Knight, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of like Santa Claus the movie meets Taxi Driver.
That I was actually going to see when I was thinking about, like, how it's kind of throughout the film he's kind of making his suit a wee bit, like, and that's what exactly what I was going to say. It was like Travis Bickle. That's exactly what it reminded me of. It's quite weird, but eventually he gets to being Santa.
Yeah,
and he goes about stealing. Looks like he's stealing presents from the naughty boys and girls.
Yes.
And does he put more down to the good boys and girls, but still steal for them as well?
I can't remember. Well, he gives a lot to the orphans and that.
Or was
the
it
sick
that,
children.
Or was it that he was stealing the stuff for the bad boys and girls and giving them the shitty ones from the toy store?
Oh,
that's maybe what it was.
Was it?
No, because he gave... Right. I'm sure it was the bit where he was digging the hole and filling the sacks full of shit. Of soil, remember?
Wasn't shit.
Remember you said it was hard to fill a sack yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
So, he's giving that to the naughty boys and girls.
Mm,
so, for the
okay,
good,
right.
Even if you're good, you're right. Getting stuff taken for you.
Right.
And then he takes it to the orphanage, and he's a good guy, and all the folk... Remember that security guard, isn't he, let him in?
Yeah.
And then he practices Merry Christmas that you don't remember, but you're laughing at him, trust me. And the security and all the staff come out and start helping him with the gifts, and he's like, no, I don't need no thanks. Merry Christmas.
Look at my presents.
We've got
loads of van full here.
Well, he says, just tell the winds it's for Santa. They're all pal of Saint Nick. You know?
Look at my sleigh, it's actually a van, but
it's a sleigh on the side of his van, so you don't mistake it for a van. And when he's driving, he's shaking the steering wheel, shouting, on Donner, on Blitzen, you know, giving it that. So, he seemed after the first drop off, you know, at this orphanage, he's like, "You're like, that's a good guy, he's all right." He's like, and I said to you, it's like a saccharine Christmas movie, you know, the bad guys get punished to get all their goods, you know, the rich bad guys get their stuff taken off them, they give them to the poor.
Aye.
It's like a Home Alone esque film, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, the good guys win. I head straight from there to go and kill people who come out of a church, who was like somebody he worked with or something like that, who didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
At the factory, who hadn't given enough toys to the orphanage, that's what it was. It was him. He's like, I don't know if there's enough toys, we just gave a hunfa.
Yeah.
But he doesn't even kill them anyway. He kills some randoms at the front, remember? And for there, it just, goes down into, some madness of him killing people and... She goes in and smothers his boat, or that guy who did the shift for.
Oh, yeah.
He's into his house and smothers him with a pillow. His wife didn't wake up and stuff like that. And eventually gets his brothers, and his brothers raging with him, and he strangles him to death, but he's not really dead.
Right.
So he takes him back out and puts him in his van, and then he heads away.
Yeah, it goes a bit. It's got a bit on the waterfront as well.
Yeah.
He actually does. It was you.
Aye.
It was you, Charlie.
And then he ends up finding a bunch of Waynes with their parents, because at this point they know there's a killer Santa on the loose.
Yeah.
And all these Waynes are defending them, and a wee Wayne actually gets a knife after her dad and turns it on him.
Aye.
And then he flies off the side of a bridge and the van flies off into the moon. No. Your podcast hasn't skipped there. I haven't missed a whole part of the plot. That's what happens.
Well, does it though?
What?
Or does the van actually crash?
Oh, the van crashes,
right.
but yeah. But in the film, the van crashes to me.
Fantasy.
Yeah.
Mind.
And he's to all a good night, blah, blah, blah. You know, and giving it the night before Christmas. It's a weird one. It's weird. It's not what I thought it was going to be at all.
Right.
I thought it was going to be more like Silent Night, Deadly Night.
A slasher, yeah.
Yeah, just like a straight up kind of killer Santa. Aye, so what do you think of this one then?
Yeah. it's kind of, it's all right. It's kind of fun, but it is all over the place. You don't know what type of film it is. As we were saying, it's got kind of sections where it's a zany comedy.
Mm.
It has little bits of slasher in there. Then it's got the whole, it's a film about two brothers. They don't like each other and they've got a lifelong grudge.
Yeah.
And he's proven that these people don't believe in Santa, but I'm doing it.
I'm showing them. It just seems so weird. You know, it's such if you're going to be a stand in anything, you know.
And he's the brother's like, what are you doing? I was 6 years old. I said that.
Yeah.
No, it was you. It was you that made me less.
the brother's quite an alright actor, though. He pulls off an interesting performance.
Yeah.
He's, I know his face somewhere. I did a bit of checking, and I watched The Walking Dead TV show.
Right.
And that he played Dale, one of the characters in the first couple of seasons of that, who was a really good character.
Right.
So he pulls it off a fairly good performance, but I think everybody else in the film is a bit rubbish. I don't think the main guy Harry's that good. I mean, he does what he's doing all right, but I don't know if it's necessary. He goes over the top. Remember, there's a couple of times when he goes over and above. Remember, there's a bit where he gets really intense.
Right, okay.
And I said to you, if he was all right when he was, and then he went to like 11 or something. You know, he got to a point where it was quite an intense scene. And you're like, oh man, this guy's suffering. And then you're like, oh fuck this guy. Right. He's taking it over. In the words of Ben Stiller, I think it is, he went full retard, you know? He never did that. It was entertaining enough. I mean, will I ever watch it again? I don't know. I can't say just now. Yeah. Not something we rush back to at all, but it's all right.
Yeah, I don't know. It has pacing issues as well, I think. It kind of lags in places.
It did. It seemed like a lot of setup. It took a long time to get to the point.
Maybe that's because you were going to think it was a slasher, though. I don't know. It's more just a kind of odd... more like Taxi Driver. It's a character piece, but with kind of dodgy psychology. It doesn't. Really...
When you look at it, it really is. It does have more in common with something like Taxi Driver than something else like a slasher. But I will watch it again because I think it deserves another watch for granted knowing what it is. And there's a shitload of special features on the DVD that I haven't checked out, so I probably will watch it again. But it is all over the place. But it was entertaining. I did get some enjoyment from it, and it was funny. Which I hope it was meant trying to be.
Yeah.
If not, whoops. But yeah, it won't be making my top five Christmas films, which I will be putting up before this goes up. So by the time you hear this,
before Christmas,
so I'll be putting up like. Tomorrow or Monday. Like that. That'll be 22nd or 23rd.
Right.
So by the time you hear this, it'll be up. When's this going up?
ASAP.
ASAP. So, I mean, it's okay. I think last year's was after Christmas anyway.
Nobody's
going to listen to this on Christmas Day. We'll try and get it up as soon as we can. And probably in between Christmas and New Year.
Aye.
Yeah. Right. So, I think that covers the films we're going to talk about tonight. Will we move on to what else we got, Gary?
Seeing as it's a Christmas special, I don't know if we want to do a standard random shit or AOB. Any other business? But maybe to top fives. I was thinking.
Yeah, of the year.
Or just one top five, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
we could go through our favourite. Blu-ray releases of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as we come to the end of the year, we like to reflect on the year gone past of releases. So we're going to talk about just some of our kind of favourite releases that either we've picked up or in mines, I think it is mostly the stuff that I've bought.
Right.
And we can just discuss why we enjoyed them or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll go first. These aren't in any particular order. I can put them in order. So I'd say this is my top five. A film that was released this year in Blu-ray, which had been deleted, I believe, in DVD before, which I mentioned before in the podcast, was Drawing Flies. It was a film that was part of the Kevin Smith's Bioskew label. Starred Jason Lee and a bunch of the kind of other kind of people he worked with. It was directed by Malcolm Ingram, who's somebody's like a friend of Kevin Smith's, and the Vyosky were given money to go and make like kind of a bunch of films, and he chose to finance his friend's film. But this was as the one that had been out in DVD ages ago, and I had managed to get a rip from somewhere on the web, but it was shitty and I didn't want to watch it. But this was released, it's like a new transfer and things like that. Bunch of special features, so it was a really nice like kind of pick up to get, and not one I expected really to be released on Blu-ray, to be honest. Number four would probably be The Fog, John Carpenter's Fog was released in a collector's edition from Shout or Scream Factory. This is one that was released in the UK already on Blu-ray, but it was kind of bare bones and the transfer wasn't very good. So they did like a new transfer and stuff like that. And there's a bunch of special features on it that are really cool. And it's another one, a case of, what's his name from Halloween 3?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Getting, like, some ridiculous poontang, you know, like, he picks up Jamie Lee Curtis right, on the yeah. side of the road, and then the next scene, he's pumped her already. Right. He doesn't even know her name, you know? It's just ridiculous. So, no, I mean, I've always liked The Fog, and it was nice to see it getting, like, a proper release and some good treatment. Number three would be, for transfer alone, and audio and things like that, the Halloween Digibook.
Oh yeah.
I don't feel there's enough special features on this to make it like a number one or anything like that. If it had been like a proper ultimate release, it could have probably went up to one or two, I would have said. It's a nice Digibook, not very thick, but there was some nice, a couple of special features on it. The commentary with John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis was really good. They got on really well together, and it's quite a good listen. And the transfer looks gorgeous, so pretty happy with that. Yeah, that's really just there because it's one of my favourite films, and it was nice to see it getting like a decent Blu-ray release.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I'd say, would be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 release from Arrow, mostly because of the packaging and the kind of the extra features were just immense. You know, the films with Toby Hooper and things like that. The transfer looks really nice as well. I've always had I think I tried to get you to go and see this. Talk about this before. I tried to get you to go and see this when we lived in Glasgow.
Oh, really?
And it was shown like at the UGC.
Right.
And you didn't go. So I ended up going myself to see this film. And I think I was like one of two people in the top, very top cinema in that place. It was Cineworld now, but it was UGC when it first opened. So I've always had it. I always kind of liked it. It was always kind of fun for me. So it was nice to see that film getting like a proper, like, respectable release and above and beyond, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the risk. And number one, which one I think was on my kind of most wanted list last year of something I wanted to see, was definitely Nosferatu.
Yeah.
So happy to see that come to Blu-ray, and I mentioned it before. I think it's just a gorgeous transfer and stuff. So yeah, I mean the detail that comes through like above and beyond the DVD is unbelievable. I mean, I know that's obvious to say when you're talking about DVD to Blu-ray. I haven't watched the full film yet, but I've flicked through it a few of my favourite scenes, and I mean, it's like this. It's really like, again, like, it's so cliche to say, but HD, but it's like looking through a window,
right? Yeah,
you know, it literally looks like you're watching images that could have been filmed that like today, but like, you know, on like an old camera. You know what I mean? It just looks really clear. And as I say, there's a lot of fine details in there that just were lost, I think, in the DVD transfers. Special features wise, you've seen some of the special features, eh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'd seen the documentary before from the DVD. They added a new commentary from David Callett, which is amazing.
Right.
That guy is really good. Like, he's really funny, but also gives you a lot of good factual information at the same time. And was there something else added? Like a couple of interviews from a guy from the BFI who had written a book about Nosferatu, I think.
But I mean, just really a surprising release.
Like, yeah, definitely.
We said it last year. We were looking forward. We'd like to have it, but I don't think we expected it.
One that did come out of the blue. Totally, like the word was, it won't get released for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was the kind of releases we thought might be coming, but were failed starts.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were talking before about how it was the older restoration, but a new HD scan.
So yeah, that's my top five for this year. There you go, Gary.
Good pick.
Hand off to you.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
Okay, at number five, I'm going to go for the Masters of Cinema release of Dr. Mabuse, The Gambler. Great companion to what we got from 2012, which was The Testament of Dr. Mabuse, the second film in the series. It's a bit odd they released them out of sync, but maybe just a case of what transfers were available. So it's good that we've got the first two parts now. It's a beautiful steelbook, and it's also got a commentary by David Callett as well. It's not a new commentary, it was on the DVD box set, but it's amazing. I've been going through it, and it's the whole movie's 5 hours.
Right, okay.
Almost 5 hours. It's like a two-part movie, and it's got a five-hour commentary on it.
Jesus, man. Yeah. That's epic.
But yeah, so I was pleased to see that. I love the film. I kind of like Fritz Lang and his silent work that he did in Germany. So I was pleased to see that come out. At four, I'll go for Nosferatu. Good to see that coming out. Three, I'm going to go with Criterion Collection's release of Badlands by Terrence Malick. That was the one that was kind of surprising because it was a Warner Brothers title. I'm not historic, and Warner Brothers don't really license anything out. And it was one of the ones that, amongst Criterion fans and Terrence Malick fans, it was one they always wanted because Terrence Malick has a good relationship with Criterion. And previously there was Days of Heaven and Thin Red Line is set in the third films already in the collection. So it was always like, oh, will we get, will Badlands ever come? Probably not. So it's quite surprising that it actually ended up coming. It's a beautiful transfer and a great selection of new extras to complement the film. Number two, I'm going to go with The Jazz Singer, the Warner Brothers Digibook Blu-ray release, the US one. In the UK, you got a steelbook, but I prefer the US one because it kind of goes all out. I think the UK one's just a single disc, if I'm not mistaken. The US one's two Blu-ray and a DVD. Yeah, and it's packed with great features. It's got like a feature-length documentary about the history of sound in film.
Right.
It's got like Jolson shorts and commentaries and loads of different stuff, and it's a beautiful like 88 page digibook. You got, that's one thing that Warner Brothers are kind of good at, with they do respect their catalogue titles. They do put the work in to give them like the kind of presentation they deserve, and for a film like that, which probably doesn't have a large scale audience, they deserve some sort of respect for that. I mean, the film itself is slightly controversial with the whole blackface thing, but I mean, it's such an important film in film history, and I do, it is really, it's kind of like a really sentimental story in that, but I kind of like it. I think Jolson's performance is pretty electric, particularly the obviously the sound scenes, but yeah, it's a great package. And at number one, I decided to go for Criterion Collection's release of On the Waterfront, another one you might say is a sort of classic studio title which Sony decided to license out, which is for the better, I think. It's a beautiful digipack release, and Criterion kind of went all out and presented the films in three different aspect ratios. Which is fantastic. And it's got really kind of high quality bonus features which you come to expect from Criterion. Just love the film, and great package. So
yeah, cool.
That's what I would go for.
Awesome.
Recommend picking up some of them if you don't have them.
Well,
not to you personally, but in general.
So going into the new year, guy, what's the first thing we're going to be looking at when we come back in the new year, fucking strong, like a big throbbing hard on, you know? One of the ones you get in the morning, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The one that could cut glass.
You're painting a picture there. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I think we'll probably be doing Pascal Laurier, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Sure.
His film Martyrs.
Martyrs, yeah.
Yeah.
Seen this before. This is, yeah, I really enjoyed this film.
Yeah.
I'm up for looking at that. That'll be a good one. It's a hardcore, you might say.
Yeah. Hardcore mainstream.
Yeah. Definitely. But it's definitely got a quality to it that I enjoy. It's a good film. I like it. We'll say no more. That's what we're going to be looking at in the new year. That's the first one we're going to be looking at in the new year. You said probably there, Gary. We're definitely doing that. Cause let's not mislead people. What are you thinking?
Well, who knows? Something might come up. But.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Probably.
Yeah, there may be something that comes up, but that's what we're definitely going to be looking at. That's the first one we're going to look at in the new year.
Aye.
Yeah, that's going to be our episode in January.
Yeah.
So for the next year, Gary, let's give the peeps at home a little bit of a sneak peek into what we're thinking about for the coming year.
Right.
Go for it.
Okay, well, some of the titles that I probably want to cover are the August Underground trilogy.
Yes,
of films.
You mentioned this a few times. Yeah.
That's one of the kind of bigger ones in the extreme canon that we haven't quite got to yet. So we'll probably do them. We'll maybe look at some of the films of the German director Marion Dora, who's been garnering some controversy recent times. Directed the film Cannibal.
Yes, right, okay. But the
and
German
yes,
penis eating man.
Angel's Melancholy as well. We'll maybe look at that. Possibly Philosophy of a Knife. Other films that are coming out, being released next year, that might do, is Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac.
Definitely, well, we'll definitely be talking about it at some point, whether we do an episode dedicated to them or not.
Aye.
Definitely be watching and talking.
There should be a new Lucifer Valentine film.
Oh, yes. We spoke about that last episode, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, about the Vomit Gore 4.
Aye.
And it's been, he's confirmed now that it's going to be this, 2014.
Should be 2014. In the middle of the year.
Okay, good. Yeah, we'll definitely look at that.
What about yourself, Simon?
Well, I think you mentioned as well before about Cronenberg's Crash,
yep.
which is a film I've never seen before, and I'd be quite keen to watch. I'm quite keen to look at. I'd like to do an episode on Lords of Salem.
All right.
So I just mentioned it to you before. Seems quite divisive amongst Rob Zombie's fans. I'd like to see what your take on it is. It does borrow heavily from the likes of Kubrick. Lynch and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I quite enjoyed it. What was the other one I said? Did I say something else? Oh yeah, Holy Motors. That's
right.
Another one I want to look at. I haven't seen it yet, but I've got it in Blu-ray and I've heard good things about it. I think it's a weird kind of film that we would look at. But yeah, I mean, if anyone's got any suggestions at home, if you want to write to us and let us know. Anything you want us to look at, or I mean, there's been some suggestions already. The Phantasm series, you ever heard of, you ever watched any of them?
No.
No, I think the first one would be worth looking at, possibly.
Oh, yeah.
I've got those in DVD. Anyway, yeah, so as I was saying, if anyone's got any suggestions at home, drop us a line on the Facebook, on the blog, or via the email address cinema_subculture@hotmail.com, or the Facebook. .com/cinemasubculture. What's the blog? Is it cinemasubculture.blogspot.com?
Yeah.
Something like that. Just hit us up and let us know if there's anything you fancy us looking at. We're open to suggestions.
Got a new Facebook feature as well now.
Okay.
You can stream the episodes straight from the page.
Well, that's handy.
Which I think you probably could do before.
Yeah.
But, what I used to do was, when you put the link in for archive.org,
yes.
it would come up with the picture.
Okay.
And I think they had a little player in it.
Right.
But I would always delete that so I could put a picture of the film.
Okay.
But,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Also, I should mention that some people have been having problems with the iTunes the last couple of episodes. It's actually a problem that one of my friends brought to my attention, and that I've actually personally been having on my own iTunes on my desktop PC, the last two episodes won't download or play. I don't know what this is yet. I'm still looking into it. I can still play them through my iPhone, and you can still download them directly from archive.org.
Yeah.
You seem to be having no problem through iTunes.
I had no problem, no.
So I really don't know what it is, but I'm still looking into it, see if you can solve it. So if there's any problem, if you can go to the blog straight or to
don't fret. There's other ways to access.
Yeah, there is other way to access it. Yeah, don't fret. Don't worry. but if you are having similar problems, drop me an email. And if the more people I can get the kind of evidence of that is having the problem, maybe the easier it'll be for the iTunes themselves to figure out what it is for me. Because I really don't know what the problem is. So that covers the housekeeping, I think, Gary. Will we sign off? Wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Hope you all have a good one. Stay safe. Don't have unprotected sex. Unless you love the person. Just saying, Gary. Just saying. You know what I mean? Just saying. Any messages for the folks at home? Keep your hat on. But I would say, Gary, to the folks at home.
Right.
And to you.
Is that a euphemism?
No.
Related to your previous statement.
No, no. I'm telling you to keep your hat on.
Keep my hat on.
You're getting your hat on. Right. Your dick. But yes, so I suppose it could also be a keep your bonnet on. That's one for your keeping right. your todger and a poke.
Well, good advice in the chilly weather.
Sure. Always, oh, yes. Uh-huh. And your earmuffs, that's it.
Aye.
Any pearls of wisdom to leave people with?
Yeah.
Me your lumreek lang. Is that right?
Lang me your lumreek.
That's what I say, yeah. Don't that one. Yeah, fuck it. Well, that'll do us. Yeah. Merry Christmas and everyone stay safe.
Have a good 2014.
Yeah. As it comes and goes. We'll see you in 2014.
It was a nightmare.
On to our potential third film. This may be cut from the podcast, just to let you know.
You may never hear it.
You may never hear it. If you're not hearing this, you're welcome. So, this is like an extra feature, it's like a bonus. Put it like at the end of the episode.
Right.
Yeah, that's what to do, right? So if you've listened this long, fucking awesome to you. Do it, I'm serious, Gary.
Yeah.
So after the episode ends, put the outro music, and then it's like a reward for people.
Totally gives it a new context.
For people who check, you know, to see how long this episode is or just cuts it off. If people just cut it off at the music, then fuck you.
Yeah.
We don't want you to listen. This is a special one for just the people that have listened right through or have forgotten to put off the track or really love the outro music. So
in the middle of the podcast, it's probably shite.
Definitely shite. No, probably.
So, extra content.
This is potentially extra.
Yeah.
So, Merry Christmas again, if you're still here with us. You thought we were finished. We're not really. This is a wee special extra bit. We watched a third film. It's called Silent Night, Deadly Night. And it would be the third in our canonical... No, no. Our chronological journey through time. And the Christmas horror film. 1984. Directed by Charles Cellar. Cellier? How would you say that? Cell with an I-E-R. Aren't you glad you stayed here with us? Eh?
An I-E-R.
Never mind. Let's go to the film. Give us a plot. Download, Gary. Download on the... Give us a download on the plot, motherfucker.
Right.
See? This is where you get the x-rated stuff.
A young man... A young whippersnapper.
He's but a child.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm looking forward to Christmas and that.
Right.
But then he gets some bad news from his catatonic grandpa.
Oh man, that's genius, that scene. I thought that was really funny when his grandpa just comes to life and starts ragging on him like, you fucking better be good boy.
Yeah, it's like Santa's evil and Christmas is
yeah,
he's evil.
Like, for Santa once. Yeah. He's like...
So then he's like,
at Christmas, so
he's not too keen on Santa after that. He's like, I don't want Santa to come.
Aye, but before that he's quite happy. He's like, what time does Santa come? Can I wait to see him? His mum's like, no, it'll be daft.
Aye.
But no, his grandpa puts the frichter up him.
He does. Then he's saying, oh, mum, when Santa come, and I don't want him to come. Yeah. But she's like, oh, no, it's fine.
His mum's like, your grandpa's nothing but a daft old shite. And he says, oh, mum, that's naughty. You shouldn't say that.
But then what happens, his parents get killed by a man in a Santa suit.
Yeah, so he's holding up at like a shop and he shoots like a clerk.
Yeah.
Takes like 32 bucks, I think it is. And he brutally murders his parents. And the boy, he's traumatised, sent to an orphanage.
Yep.
Where he's further traumatised by a stupid mother superior who... Mm. Almost you would think she didn't know what happened to him. You know what I mean? The way she forced him to sit on Santa's knee and everything. It's like quite cruel. And punishes him and stuff like this. It's crazy. So, continue, Gary.
I'm
stepping on your toes.
No, no. So, gets to the working age. He has a job in the toy store. Causes get the muscles in that. Tom
Cruise. He's a big. Well, no, handsome. He's a big strapping lad.
Aye.
Looks a bit stupid, but aye, my opinion. He's not my taste of man.
Yeah.
Personally, as the story progresses, he's a brilliant worker, isn't he?
Yeah.
Lifting all the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, making the manager all proud and stuff like that, and he's getting on with his workmates and stuff. But then what happens? Christmas season comes around. He's not so happy after that. He's turned into a bit of a bugger.
Yeah.
Well, you don't see him turn into a bugger. You hear it from one of his workmates who says, "You've been a bugger since it was recently." What's wrong with you? You've been a bit of a bugger recently. No one tickling my bum. And with the heat, you know? So he starts to like sort of have attitude, you know. But he fancies one of the lasses in the shop, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Fancies her something rotten. He's got a bit of thing with sexual stuff as well, with the things that happened at the nunnery. The orphanage and his mum possibly getting raped. I don't know what happened to that, looked like that. and a bit of sex being bad. But he has a dream about it, so he does sex. So, as it comes around, the new Santa for the store.
That's when the real trouble starts, eh?
And they basically, I thought that would have been interesting to see a scene where they are trying to get him to be Santa. Because, the guy comes in and asks him, "I want you to do something for me." And he's like, "Oh, I did it for you, Mr. Parsons." I don't know his name. And he's like, "Oh, that's good. That's good, really. That's real good." You know, one of them. And then you see him dressed as Santa, and it's like, no reservation about this at all. No, not so much as a Sister Mary. I don't think I could do this job anymore. You know what I mean? I'm all right for lifting boxes, but no, this Santa piss. You can't what I like with Santa. Aye. I punched a Santa once.
Mm-hmm.
I made his nose bleed, and then I got whipped for it. Oh no, I'm not doing it. But anyway, straight into the Santa costume. What's your papers there, guy?
Yep.
And he's all right. He's no bad as a Santa, but he's been a bit mean with the Waynes. He's saying, "Don't be naughty, you fuckers." And I try to sit on his knee, and he's telling them that they're going to get punished, because that's what he was telling his grandpa.
Right.
And then his mum get punished for being naughty, effectively. And the parents all think he's great with the Waynes.
Oh,
he's fucking good with the Waynes, yeah, isn't he? He's a big strapping fella, that boy. So he's muscles as far as you can see. He tickles my bum all the time. What do you mean? Tickles your bum. Never mind. So that's fine. That's all right. He's getting on okay. He's not too bad. But then it's a Christmas party. It's the thingy party. The shop party. And they're getting shut. Everybody's drunk. And his workmate that he worked with at the back is a bit of a dick. Takes the lass that he fancied through the back and is kissing on that and all that. And then starts to like sexually assault her, basically. He's not for that at all. His flashbacks to his mum been killed and all that, and then it looks like he almost embodies the Santa,
right?
In his head, if it's like a punishment thing, and then goes and kills the guy for doing that. Stops him first,
which the girl takes offence to, which I thought was a wee bit much, because at least like, "Oh, cheers, but you've killed the guy."
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Like, "What have you done? He was only trying to rape me. I'm all right." Calm down.
Mental.
Get
that
knife away.
He was only raping me. What do you think he was trying to do?
You take things too far, you.
It's the first time I've been raped. Take things too far, that's true. But he does strangle him with like fairy lights.
Oh, is it right?
Right, but then the next shot, there's stuff in the cut that's been obviously restored from older like transfer and stuff like that. So you can see when it's kind of been cut before. But it cuts to like him covered in blood.
Right.
But he's just strangled him with fear.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
In one cut, there's no blood, and the next, it's as if he slashed his throat.
Right.
So, and you just say she goes mental at him. I mean, a more reasonable response would maybe like, "Oh my God, Billy, you killed him. Oh no." You know, something like that, rather than, "You're a maniac, you're so crazy." It just goes mental. So then he kills her as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shame to. She's a brilliant, so she's all right. She didn't deserve the box cutter, the Stanley knife to the chest.
Is that what she gets?
Aye. You hear it up to her rib bones. Oh. So, and then he heads out, kills his boss, kills the woman that was working with the assistant woman as well. and then heads off on a rampage of one, I think, two, yeah. three. Kills the lassie and her boyfriend, and then the guys in the sleds. And then that's that, and then he heads to the orphanage.
Yeah, it's kind of weak in terms of plotting.
Yeah, it kind of builds, and it seems to be going somewhere.
Yeah.
But then it kind of peters out, doesn't it? Just like... I don't know. I didn't hate this film when I first watched it. But I watched the sequel, which was funny. But it's meant to be, it's a spoof. It wasn't good either, but it was... But when having to go back and watch it, because I watched this last year as well, having to go back and watch it for this, I did feel a bit of a task.
Yeah. It has quite a good potential idea in it, which isn't really capitalised on, which is it's Christmas time, and you've got a killer on the loose dressed as Santa. And obviously, there's a lot of Santas about. so that would be a great suspenseful plot device.
Well,
but
funny,
what it actually it ends up cashing in on that as a comedy thing.
It's funny you should say that. I watched the trailer for the, well, I don't know if it's not a straight remake, but it's called Silent Night.
Right.
It's released last couple of years, last 5 years, something like that. And it seems to make a bit of a plot device of that. The guy wears a Santa costume, but he wears like a kind of one of those clear plastic masks, you know, like kind of, but it's like Santa's face. And you see him a lot of scenes when, or what a scene when the cops are chasing him, and it's through a bunch of Santas in a street. Santa. I don't know how that plays in, huh?
Santa.
Yeah. A flock of Santis. Santines. Klauses. And you see, so they play that, you know, the fact on the fact of him being like kind of hard to find because there's a lot of Santas. They do that a bit in this one with the girl's father climbing in her window.
Aye.
And but I mean that's one thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does feel like I like the stuff. Not like I've still found the stuff with him and the orphanage hard to watch. Like from a point of view of like. It seemed very cruel, and you could see how the guy got fucked up. But then when it switches to the modern day, it does take on a more comedic tone. So I kind of like the way that it's set up with the orphanage stuff and that punishment thing, you know, it seemed kind of a more serious film. But I feel like it was definitely restricted by either the scope of what the production could do or money, whatever, you know what I mean? It seemed like there was a bigger idea there that they could have done. They didn't really get to capitalise on. So, but I mean, of the films we spoke about tonight, this is the only one to have any sequels. You know, and like I think like four sequels.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting out of the three films that one would get a sequel, you know, and multiple sequels. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess.
I think it was out of the controversy.
Well, yeah, possibly. Plus, it's just like, that's more, maybe a more simple idea that it's a killer Santa.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But I thought, I mean, Black Christmas seemed like it would be ripe for a proper sequel.
Yeah.
But, So what about the controversy? Like, what do you know about that?
Yeah, well, I think it stemmed from the fact that, more so than the film, it was about the advert. The commercial that played on TV, which featured a Santa. I don't know. There was the print ad, which had Santa going down the chimney with an axe. And then I don't know what it was in the... I guess it was a clip from the film about Santa with an axe. Then there was a kind of mother's group that took it to the president of... was it TriStar that distributed the film? Or,
right.
And then eventually the film got pulled.
Okay.
They didn't release it, but then get released by somebody else, is that right?
I'm not sure.
I think that's what caused the cuts and all that.
Right. But, I mean, if those cuts had been still intact, I mean, it would have been really, a really disappointing watch, I think. Because they don't add much to it, but there wouldn't have been anything there, like, you know, to the murders without the cuts, I think.
Yeah. In that slasher documentary, Going to Pieces, the woman that plays the head nun, she's interviewed and she's talking about, they just made a bad mistake going that route in terms of the advertising. If they hadn't had the Santa in it, then it would have probably just flown under the radar and nobody would have known.
Because
that supposedly been done before. There was a Tales from the Crypt episode that had a killer Santa before that. And
Christmas Evil was before that. So. But I mean, arguably that would, if it had flown under the radar, then maybe we would never, you know, maybe we would never have, she wouldn't have been maybe talking about it in a documentary for one.
I mean, I get it is one of the ones that kind of comes later in the slasher cycle where it's a wee bit tired, maybe.
And very low budget. Yeah. When they were getting to the point where like, everybody was making them, so there was no money for them, I don't think. It was just kind of like you went and made it and then tried to make anything off it. not quite as enjoyable as the other two, I don't think.
It's maybe a in some ways a better, tighter story wise than Christmas Evil because that's just so odd. But the oddness makes that kind of more interesting.
Yeah. Cool.